Judith Smeltzer, and this is a special edition of Intersection. When Floridians head to the polls for next week's primary, Orange County residents will have a unique task on their hands. They'll be choosing the first elected school board chair in the state. All three candidates for the position are here to debate the issues this week. Welcome to Ballot 2010, an Intersection special. Years ago, Orange County residents voted to create the position of an elected school board chair chosen by all the county's voters. The new post will join the 7 board members who will continue to represent their individual districts. Until now, those 7 have picked a chair from among themselves. The new chair will be the 8th board member, and if any vote ends in a tie, he or she will cast the deciding ballot. The primary is next Tuesday, and if no one gets more than 50% support, the top 2 vote-getters will go head-to-head in a runoff in November. All 3 candidates are with us today. Former Orange County Commissioner Homer Hartage, teacher and former charter school operator Leona Rockman, and former State Representative Bill Sublette, who's also a former chair of the WMFE Board of Trustees. Thank you all for coming today. You can find links to all of the candidates' websites and bios online at WMFE.org/ballot. But I want to jump right into the issues now, guys. The biggest one, of course, is the budget. And obviously, like every branch of local government here, the school board is fighting to balance the budget as the property tax revenues continue to decline. And no politician wants to say that they're going to raise taxes, but the current school board has started down that road. Just to give some background, last month the board gave preliminary approval for a quarter-mil tax hike next year. It would bring in an extra $22 million. The board also moved forward on a possible November referendum on a full 1 mil property tax increase for the next year, and that would bring in an estimated extra $85 million, I should say, a year. And both those items are still waiting final approval. So I'd like to ask you all how you would vote on those issues if you were chair. And Bill Sublette, we'll start with you.
Well, my wife Susie and I, we both intend to vote for the 1 mil that the school board put on the ballot because, frankly, we can afford it. But I will say this. I would not have voted to put that issue on the ballot. In fact, I've been harshly critical and stridently and loudly critical of the school board for making that vote. I think it was a terrible, terrible move to put that issue on the ballot this cycle. And I say that because if you're going to go to voters and ask them to pass a tremendous tax increase, which that is, you first have to regain the trust of those voters, which I don't think the board has done. Secondly, you need to lay the groundwork and go out there and meet with the community's leaders, meet with education advocates, meet with business leaders, and prepare the campaign that you'll need and the support that you'll need to pass that initiative. I'm confident that tax is going to fail. And when it fails, I'm confident it will set back Orange County Public Schools, not 1 or 2, but 4, 5, 6, maybe even a decade back on going to the voters again. We can't afford to set ourselves back. It was a knee-jerk reaction to a crisis that was perceived that may not have even been real based upon the latest funding that's been handed down by the U.S. Congress. And we've got to stop making knee-jerk, precipitous decisions without thinking them out, without planning, and without a little bit more political acumen or smarts about us.
Homer Hartage?
Well, I fully understand where the school board was headed with this. They're facing a funding cliff. They project at $95 million. That could mean about 1,500 to 1,600 teaching jobs lost. They say $95 million. It could actually be as much as $125 million. They don't want to see those teachers laid off. They don't want to see staff workers gone, and they don't want to see reductions in the quality of our education. So they were looking for ways to fix that. I disagree with their decision. I'll vote against the tax. I don't think families can afford another dime before we have proven to them that we have done everything that we possibly can to manage our financial responsibilities. I mean, the public is making adjustments. They expect the school board to make adjustments too. So my first priority as a chairman would be to go through every line item of the budget and search for ways to reduce costs. Taking out $90 million is not easy, but we can't just depend on the federal government. Even if they come and bail us out this time, we really can't depend on the federal government to run the Orange County Public Schools. We appreciate them, but we must be responsible for our own budgets.
Leona Rockman?
I was in an interview with Joey Cadle, I guess it was last week, at another radio station, and she indicated that they're okay for this upcoming year because of the stimulus money, but they do have a $90 million deficit. well, I think we should start looking at ways that we can start planning and looking at ways that we can eliminate wasteful spending, look in how we can maybe consolidate buildings and things where we have lots of people in different learning communities where we can maybe save costs there. We can save costs on training facilities that our resource teachers now, they get it at some of the local universities. They could be housed at the schools and they could save money there. So I'm going to go through the budget. I'm going to analyze it and I'm going to eliminate the wasteful spending. So I'm going to look to see how much money that we can actually come up with. In addition to that, I'm going to lobby legislators. Before, you know, making a tax increase, you know, we need to start looking at ways that we can be more efficient. Once we're more efficient in our spending, our state representatives are going to be more inclined to work with us as well as our federal government. In addition to that, I think that Orange County Public Schools should keep their promises. When they say they're going to do something, they should do it. If they say they're going to build schools, they should do it. They should not come and say, oh, now we don't have any money, or come across and tell teachers, now we don't have any money for you, because they wait to the end of the year. What they need to be doing is planning ahead of time, do a 2 to 3 year budget. You know, they have a strategic plan. They need to, you know, adhere to this strategic plan. So I believe by eliminating wasteful spending, we're going to come up with quite a bit of money. I've already looked at the budget. I already found ways that I've already decided what I will do if I get into office.
Leona, I'm going to stop you right there. We need to move ahead, okay. And we certainly will talk about ways to cut the budget in just a moment. I want to tell you.
Can I interject here?
Sure, Bill, just for a second.
You know, in politics nowadays, so often candidates take moving positions depending on who they're talking to, and I think we need to start to set the record straight in this race. Ms. Rockman came out emphatically, and she really didn't answer your question, in support of the one mill tax increase last week at a County Watch forum. In front of an audience of about 15 members of County Watch. Mr. Hardage last night at the League of Women Voters Forum was asked this question, and he implied strongly that he supported the one mill tax increase. So
Okay, can we be civil? Can we be civil and
be civil? But I didn't get to finish my response, and you let him interrupt.
Can we stop? Can we go one by one for just a moment? If you'll finish what you have to say, I will give you two a chance to respond in just a moment. All right.
That's my only point, is I just want to make it clear to the listeners that Ms. Rockman has taken a position at public forums that she supports one mill, and Mr. Hardage has as well.
Okay, Leona Rockman, will you clarify what is your position on the one mill for about 30 seconds?
What I said at the last forum is that before I would vote for the mill only after we have eliminated all the wasteful spending and determined that we didn't have any more money. I would not vote for it unless I was able to do that first. And by the way, Mr. Sublett has also voted for, said that he would be in favor of the flip at one of the forums, and then yesterday at the other forum said that he would not be in favor of the flip. So, you know, he's made some inconsistencies as well.
Okay, Homer Hardage.
I have no idea what positions Mr. Sublett has taken, but I'm very, very firm in my position. I have never been in support of a tax. I'm not sure what he heard, but the entire forum was taped, and it would be on live radio in just a few days. So if any of you have questions about that, you can look on the Internet. But public has given everything they can take. I'm against the tax.
Okay. Thank you all very much for clarifying your positions on those items. I want to remind you that you're listening to Ballot 2010, an intersection special on 90.7 WMFE. I'm Judith Smelser in for Mark Simpson this week, and we're talking with the candidates for Orange County School Board Chair. You can join our conversation at the Florida Talks blog, and while you're there, you can see what public radio listeners around the state are talking about. There's a link to that blog on our website, WMFE.org/intersection. Continuing with the conversation about the budget, obviously we've been talking about taxes, tax increases. The other side of that is cutting spending, and some of you have gotten into that to some degree. I want to take up one of the controversial ideas that's been thrown out there, and that's been to close some small schools, consolidate them into larger facilities. Supporters of this idea say it's the only efficient way to go. There's lots of opposition to it as well. Federal stimulus money did allow the board to table that idea recently, but it's certainly possible that it'll come up again as the stimulus runs out. So I'd like to know, do you support closing small schools? If so, how would you decide which ones to close? And if not, how do you defend against that inefficiency argument? And Homer Hardage, we'll start with you this time.
Yeah, this is an extremely sensitive issue for parents. It has to do with not just education, but the safety of our schools and the proximity of parents to their school. They want to be able to walk their kids to school and to do things like that. I have not been privileged to the decision-making process of the board when they've decided to drop some schools, and there have been several, I want to say 10 schools that they propose to be dropped. My personal position is that I support neighborhood schools. Now, as chairman of the school school board and as a school board member, one of our primary responsibilities is to manage facilities. I take that responsibility seriously. But I think whenever you get to these complex issues that touch to the hearts of parents, that you first start by getting their opinion and by letting them know that you're listening to them. And in many cases, you can find ways to make decisions that are favorable for them. But in some instances, there will be cases where you cannot. But there should be no instance where you cannot listen to them and get their input.
Leona Rockman?
I'm not in favor of closing any schools. I think that we need to keep the neighboring schools. I think we need to get input from the parents. I also think that we need to collaborate with other school districts, other large school districts like Orange County, and see ways that they're dealing with this same issue. We have to really look outside the box.
Bill Sublette?
No, and I've long taken a position that if anything, we need to be building more small neighborhood schools. And it's one of my top three priorities is to lead the board in a direction to start showing that we can build cost-effective small neighborhood schools in our inner city core. When the schools that were targeted for closure with the last budget crisis, one thing that should be known to all your viewers is they were all high-poverty inner-city schools. They were all schools that we promised the voters when the half-cent sales tax increase was passed, that we promised the voters would be renovated. One, I think that those are the schools we can least afford to close because high-poverty families need a small neighborhood school because they don't have access to transportation the way that wealthier schools and wealthier parents have. Secondly, I think we need to start making decisions on what is best for the education of children. And nobody can dispute that smaller schools and smaller classrooms are best for the education of children. When we go larger schools and start to consolidate schools into larger schools, we're making a decision on cost, not on what is best for the education of the children. And that's got to stop.
Well, another idea that was debated, implemented, and then reversed was, of course, the now infamous schedule swap that was put in place. The district switched start times for middle and high schools in an effort to save on transportation costs. That happened, but it was so unpopular that the board reversed it after just a year. So I'd like to know, would you have supported that swap? Do you think it needs to be reinstated? Leona Rockman, we'll start with you.
No, I did not agree with it when they first did it, and I don't agree with it now. You need to keep the times, the schedules the same. It was very disruptive to parents and our community members. And by the way, middle school research indicates that middle school students are the ones that need more sleep, not high school students.
Bill Sublette?
I don't support going back to the flip or as Mr. Hardage likes to say, I don't want to steal your line, Homer, but reflipping, going back to a reflip. I think that parents need constancy, and I've said in every forum that we've had and in every interview that we've had, we need to stick with the schedule we have. Parents have had enough. I'm a parent. I'm the only candidate in this race with children in public school. I can tell you as a parent myself, we can't afford and we can't tolerate any more schedule changes. I do want to clarify something that was said earlier, though. I never said that I supported the original flip. What I said is I think that later start times for high school students is better. If the flip had been made as it was to bring in later start times for high school students, I think we should have stuck with what we did 3 years ago. But now that we've gone back, we need to ride with what we've got and have constancy for our families.
Homer Hardage?
Yeah, well, Bill is right. Parents like consistency. They like to know what's going on. But also they are concerned about the start times of our schools. And I think that our middle schools are starting too early, period. But that's my personal feeling. But in terms of the flip, I did not support the flip. And he's correct. I don't support reflipping.
Well, obviously, there are lots of ideas out there for how to cut costs. Many of them are unpopular. And I'm wondering if there's anything you would pledge right now not to do in the name of cutting costs. Leona Rockman, we'll start with you.
Okay. I would not cut teaching positions or support positions in the public schools, because every time you cut a position, you hurt students' education. I would cut other things, material things, buildings, facilities, as far as restructuring the county in order to make it more efficient. But the last to be cut would be a instructional or support position.
Bill Sublette?
You know, so much talk is given to the funding cliff and the funding crisis. I think voters are getting wary of it. We've heard it for 3 years, and each time the legislature has made sure that education's held harmless. We only took a $6 million cut last time we heard of a funding crisis in a district with a budget of $1.66 billion. Just this week, the U.S. Senate and U.S. Congress has sent down education funds to prevent the funding cliff, and those funds now extend out another full year beyond the cliff that we had anticipated. We've got to stop being alarmist and being chicken littles and claiming the sky is falling until we know what kind of budget crisis we have. I will say this. If we have a funding cliff occur where we're talking nine-figure cuts, by that I mean $100 million or more, any candidate who tells you that they can address that by simply addressing waste and inefficiency, I think is being disingenuous. 70% of the operating budget of schools is salaries, pure and simple. We could cut every position down at the ELC, and we wouldn't come close to making a $100 million cut. We could get every position outside of the schools, and we wouldn't come close to a $100 million cut. So if we have a nine-figure funding cliff that hits us, we're going to have to be honest with the voters, and we're going to have to look at what personnel that we cut and where we ask salaries to roll back. What is sacrosanct to me and totally off the table? I've said throughout this campaign, we will absolutely not cut any certified teaching positions. They're the backbone of our school system. They're what make our school system work and function effectively. We can't afford to cut any teachers, and that's absolutely off the table for me. If we have to cut support staff or administrative staff, then we'll have to do that because, again, that's 70% of the budget. And by the way, the other 30% of the budget is fixed capital costs, the money we pay to OUC and Florida Power to keep the lights on, the money we pay to the phone companies to keep the phone lines open. We really don't have any leeway in those costs for the most part, beyond a few million here and there.
Homer Hartage?
Yeah, the question is, what will we pledge not to cut? I'm not prepared here now to take anything off the table. I am prepared to tell you what my priorities would be. My priorities would be to create schools that are high-performing schools. I'll look for ways to adjust the budget to make sure that our students don't suffer when we make these cuts. I don't want them to suffer by not having access to the proper classes, not being able to graduate on time. I'll pledge to renew our efforts in accountability so that people have confidence in what we do. But I don't think that at this point, without thoroughly getting in there and reviewing every line item, that we can make those decisions. But you can expect me to do a thorough review of the school board's reserves and their entire budget, and I'll find ways. It's not a matter of can we make those amount of cuts. The question is, where are our priorities? I'll make sure our priorities are right.
We're talking with the candidates for Orange County School Board Chair on Ballot 2010 and Intersection Special on 90.7 WMFE. I'm Judith Smelser, and you can hear more election coverage online at WMFE.org/ballot. Well, let's talk about class size, because obviously the class size amendment comes into full force this year. Schools say there's just not enough money to hire enough teachers to meet the requirements. Now, of course, voters could loosen those requirements in November if they pass an amendment to the state constitution, but there will still be caps. So, Homer Hartage, we'll start with you. How would you implement state class size requirements with as little classroom disruption as possible?
Well, I think there's another question inherent in that, and that is why haven't we planned for this already? The school system has known for years that the voters wanted us to go to lower class sizes. I don't understand why they haven't done it already. Leon County has already made plans for it. I think that Orange County is behind the curves. I think that the school board has not taken this whole thing seriously and that parents have voted for smaller class sizes, and that's what we should do. It seems that when you talk to them, they're expecting this to come from the principals up. I believe that leadership goes from leadership down. And so I think that we do what the voters say, we implement the law, and we find a way. The question is, where is the money? That's our job to find that. That's why they elected that. That's why they elect school board members, to figure it out. And there's another issue on the ballot this year to amend that. If the voters wanted it larger, they would have voted for larger before. The voters have decided that smaller class sizes are better, so voters should not support changing it. We do need to fix it. There are some problems. But other than that, I'll do everything within my power to implement the law that the voters passed.
Leona Rockman?
I will also do everything in my power to adhere to the mandate. I do want to say that when the voters did pass this, or when they proposed this, we were in a better economic situation than we are today. So I think, now that we're in a, really bad economic situation, they may have a different view. I don't know. But all I'm going to say is that I will adhere to the mandate. But I believe that we need to eliminate waste. We need to start looking outside the box, as I said before. There's several thousand resource teachers that are great for education, but they may have to do dual roles. We may have to have them as a teacher and be a resource. We may have them housed at the schools. There needs to be other ways that we can adhere to the class size amendment without having to hire a lot of additional teachers.
Bill Sublette?
I strongly support the current class size restrictions and amendment that was passed by the voters back in 2000, I believe. And I support it because, in a lot of ways, I'm a poster child for crowded classrooms. I went to high school in Florida. I went to a crowded high school. We were so crowded that the 9th and 10th graders went to school from 7 in the morning until noon, and at noon they left, and at 12:30, the 11th and 12th graders came in and went to school from 12:30 to 5:30. I also represented a district in the legislature that was among the most crowded districts in the entire state of Florida. And I know that when I was in the legislature, that most of the legislators just simply don't believe that crowded classrooms is a problem. It took a constitutional amendment to get it across to them that the voting public, and myself included, believes that crowded classrooms are a tremendous problem. In fact, I like to share with folks that the only people who think that a crowded classroom isn't a problem are people who don't have a child in a kindergarten class with 35 other students or in a first grade class with 40 students. And that's not exaggerating. That was the situation in Florida before the voters passed the class size amendment. We need to adhere to it. We don't need to amend it. I think it's fine as it is as far as the funding for it. Again, that's another example of OCPS being alarmist. The truth is we're very, very close to meeting the class size amendment. We've been meeting it on a school-wide average throughout this district for the last 2 years. Now we just have to get it down to the classroom average, and I'm confident that we'll be able to do that. And we're not talking hundreds of millions. We're talking tens of millions, which may sound like a lot of money, but again, in a district with a $1.6 billion budget, it's a very small percentage of the overall district budget, and we'll find a way to make it work.
Switching gears a little bit, a big task facing the school board will be to find a replacement for outgoing school superintendent Ron Blocker. He's retiring at the end of the next school year. He's been there for the past decade. So if you're elected school board chair, what will your role be in choosing his successor? And what are your criteria for the ideal candidate? Bill Sublette?
I've long said that I believe how we go about hiring a new superintendent is as important in many ways, if not more important, than whom we actually hire as a new superintendent. One of the primary planks of my platform for this position is that we've got to do a better job of engaging the community in Orange County Public Schools. And this is just a wonderful opportunity to put our actions where our words are by engaging the community in the new superintendent search. We have got to create a broad-based search committee made up of representatives of the minority community, representatives of the business community, education advocates, and representatives of education advocacy groups that have sprung up in Orange County, representatives of all walks of our community and the entire fabric of our community. And we've got to do more than just make a show of it. We've got to let that group have a say in the actual selection. We have to task that group, including school board members, with interviewing the candidates and winnowing it down to the finalists, and then picking with the assistance of that community an individual that this entire community supports. We are going through a sea change in the culture of Orange County Public Schools. We will have this new position of school board chair that you're interviewing us for today, Judith, and thank you for that. We have a new school board attorney, which is a very important position for the first time in nearly 20 years in Orange County Public Schools. And in a year and a half, we're going to have a new superintendent hitting the ground. And that man or woman who is hired by Orange County Public Schools and hired by the community to be our new superintendent has got to enter office on the very first day with the widespread backing of the entire community, and not just the backing, the enthusiasm of the community. So you have my commitment and your listeners have my commitment. We will engage the entire community in that search process.
Homer Hardage?
Well, on this idea, Bill Sublette and I are totally different. Not to denigrate his concepts, but we have different concepts about that. He believes, and I hope I'm characterizing it correctly, this is kind of a consensus decision for selecting a superintendent. I believe it's an executive decision. And that means that the school board and the superintendent and the school administration have the responsibility to select someone that meets the objectives of our school system. And you start by using what we have in our strategic plan, someone that has high character, a good moral values, someone that's managed a school system as large as ours. We're the 10th largest school system in the nation, and we're the second largest employer in Orange County, over 22,000 people. So it has to be someone that's capable of managing a large apparatus like our school system, someone that has a genuine love and compassion for schools and kids, and someone that has a track record of getting the job done. That person may be within the school system. He could be somewhere dispersed throughout the United States. I think that we hire an executive search committee to produce a series of candidates, and we evaluate those candidates on their qualifications, their ambitions, and things like that. And then we make a decision. And the board has elected us to make that decision. We do count on the community to give us input as to what they want, but when it comes to making that decision, they voted us to do that.
Leona Rockman?
Well, I have to say now, this is the first time, but I do agree with both Harmer Hardage and Bill Sublette because I think we need to do a little bit of both. I think this is going to be a very, very important decision. And with my background, I've been trained in how to interview the best qualified person for the job, which is a targeted selection, which I was trained in Orange County. And I do have the experience that they taught me in Orange County. So I think that'll be a plus. But one of the things I want to say is that Mr. Sublette had mentioned that the process is going to be important in selecting it. Well, I believe that it is going to be important, but the process that they used for hiring the attorney for Orange County, they didn't follow proper procedure in doing that. So I hope if I get in, I'll be able to follow proper process and procedure for hiring our next superintendent. But they did not use that in the process of hiring their attorney. But I do believe that involving the community and, being able to get with the board and having input from people before making a final decision on your superintendent is going to be critical. I don't think we should make the final decision. I think we should get input. We should ensure that we are adhering to policies and procedures. And we're also getting someone who does love students, who does have a great track record, who is someone that's passionate about education and has done it before in the past. So, yes, I think that my credentials and my background will help elect the next superintendent.
May I make an additional comment on this point?
Sure, Bill, go ahead.
Before we move on. With respect to Mr. Hardage, we do disagree on this. I don't believe that it's a absolute criteria for whoever we hire that they be an individual who's managed a system as large as ours or even necessarily an educator. I think we need to open it up to business leaders and senior military leaders as well. I also agree that we disagree that it's an executive decision by the chair, the superintendent, and the board. I think that's absolutely what has been wrong with Orange County Public Schools. I think that we need to be inclusive of the community and not just making a show of their input, but actually giving them an actual vote in the hire and who is hired. So with respect to Mr. Hardage, and it's a respectful disagreement, we do have a disagreement on this position.
Leona?
I just wanted to make one comment. I do agree with both of my opponents. I did want to say that whoever we select, they shouldn't have any personal interest in this position other than wanting to improve the educational system. It shouldn't just be about money. It shouldn't be about who they know, if they have any contacts in the school system, if they just want to get in to get their friends in and whatever. They need to have no personal interest. That's my point.
And that's going to have to be the last word. Homer Hardage, Leona Rockman, and Bill Sublette are running for Orange County School Board Chair in the primary election on August 24th. Thank you all so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have right now, but our coverage continues online at WMFE.org/ballot. You can hear an extended version of today's debate there. You can also listen to all of last week's ballot 2010 debate with the candidates for Orange County Mayor. Let us know what you think about these debates and share your thoughts about all the primary races on the WMFE Facebook page and on the Florida Talks blog. A link to the blog is at WMFE.org/intersection. And while you're there, you can also download our podcast. Intersection is made possible by WMFE members and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us for Ballot 2010, an Intersection special. I'm Judith Smelser in for Mark Simpson this week. Thanks for listening. We'll